Fox cancels its first show, Tommy Lee Jones battles Mother Nature, and Pokemon is back, baby, this week in 30-2010.
30-2010, 3 decades every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, the presses are awaiting, yes, we're going to the 80s, then the 90s, and 2000s.
Welcome to a new episode of 30-2010, a weekly look back at what happened that week, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. This is April 21st through the 27th, that exact week. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I am Coast Host, Chris Antista.
I'm Dave Rudden, and I invented Post-its.
I'm Diana Goodman, I am not going to my reunion.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yes, yeah. We're looking at the world, mostly pop culture, from 30 and 20 and 10 years ago, from this very week, if you don't know what 30-2010 is. Kind of tired of explaining it. It's been like 100 shows.
I already did it in this very show.
I'm tired of it.
But we do start in the 80s, so 1987. A bit of news before we get into the movies, because we go movies, music, TV, games.
The movie.
This is a weird week. This is a surprisingly light
and
week.
And sometimes no game.
And sometimes no game. 87 was a different world. But news really quick. U.S. bars entrance to newly elected Austrian Chancellor Kurt Waldheim over World War II activities. What did Kurt do?
Well, they're not quite sure. It seems more like what he didn't do. That he was definitely in the German army. Mm-hmm. He was definitely an officer. Uh-huh. He was down in, I believe, Greece. And the question was, did he have anything to do with executing partisans? And how did he not know about the Holocaust because Jews were getting exported left and right and center from right where he was?
Right.
Mm. It's sort of weird that because he had been the Secretary General of the UN.
Jesus.
So, like, none of this shit came out in the 70s when you think it'd be easier for people to remember.
Yeah.
You know, 30 years ago what happened, like we're remembering now. But yeah, it seemed like it got into the 80s and everyone was sort of like, oh shit, we didn't deal with any of that stuff, did
we left the world in a not great place.
We really didn't we just all got to the 50s and we went, the war didn't happen. Let's not talk about the war.
So did this like lead to anything? Like was he eventually like, yeah, you can come back and was this his fate?
Damn, Chris. No, that was it. It was pretty much the U.S. Said, I think they officially lifted it, but I don't think he ever came to the U.S. They were sort of like,
good.
You're Austrian.
It never stopped someone from being accepted as Pope, though.
You know who else was Austrian?
What? Oh, Hitler.
Our future president?
Yes. So, So it was sort of weird. It's weird, like the 80s, I feel like all of a sudden we started to deal with World War II in a bit more ways. Mm. It's strange.
Could Arnold ever become our president?
Not constitutionally.
I know not constitutionally, but what does it matter?
Yeah, what does that matter now?
I believe people said that he couldn't be the new host of The Celebrity Apprentice, and he's done that, so...
It got canceled, though, didn't it? Didn't they take yank it off the... I don't know.
It won't be back.
I don't know. But movies this week, The Movie. Extreme Prejudice.
Fascinating film Diane and I know nothing about and can't watch.
Can't find it. Yeah. I tried to find stuff about it.
Nick Nolte, Powers Booth, some people, like, whether on the production side or writing, directing. It's
was written by John Milius, directed by Walter Hill.
Of the Warriors.
All people I like.
Yeah. 48 Hours. They're coming off 48 Hours and reteaming with Nick Nolte.
Because it's like, I wrote down ties to Wild Bunch, Apocalypse Now, Deer Hunter, like all these
people. It was in fruition for a long time, and I know... I'll refrain from talking about the documentary Electric Boogaloo. Have I mentioned Milius, the Don Milius documentary here before?
John Milius?
He's a fascinating character.
He's a weird guy.
He's one of the trio of USC graduates that include Spielberg and George Lucas. The three of them...
No, you're thinking Coppola.
No.
Spielberg did not go to USC.
Oh, he didn't?
He went to Cal State Long Beach and dropped out.
Wherever they went together, they made a trio pact to like share the profits of their films together.
Wow.
So John Milius... Yeah, I'll buy into this Star Wars and what is it, Indiana Jones and E.T. stuff, and sure, and then they get a profit of his little surfing movie. But he came a fairly his directing career didn't take off, but his screenwriting career did. He wrote Apocalypse Now. This movie's title is specifically from a line he wrote in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Execute with extreme prejudice.
Yeah, and he wanted to direct it, and it just kind of sat on the shelf for a while, and was eventually given over to Walter Hill. But John Milius is a fascinating person.
Yep.
That documentary especially, because I don't know if he's actually an asshole or he decided to, in the 80s, adopt that persona. To burst into executive boardrooms, present scripts, and pull guns on... This literally happened.
Yeah.
Wow. And make a more right-wing... He's kind of responsible for that flavor of 80s action film. He wrote Red Dawn. Apocalypse Now and all that stuff, like the rah-rah war horse shit. That was totally him.
I would not call Apocalypse Now rah-rah war.
I think there's a ton of war spank in that film. There's some really those napalm sequences in particular have a lot of Republicans creaming their jeans as we speak right now.
That's true.
But I don't know. Milius is a fascinating person, and this is a totally John Milius movie. And the documentary is really, really good. Was on Amazon Prime when I watched it, and it's really sad because he had a stroke and can't write anymore. Oh. But the end of it was like, we can start writing now. And so that was like 2014. So hopefully John Milius will be back in this.
A couple months ago, we had that guy who had like locked in disease. He was still able to write. Yeah. Just blinked to his nurse.
Yeah.
But this guy got a stroke.
The poetic irony of a writer whose a stroke renders their arm unusable. Like
use the other arm.
Maybe.
Use your feet.
How many screenplays has Dave written?
Man, Dave.
With my feet, many. My hands, none. All right.
How's that article on wrestling mishaps?
But here's a
full facilities.
Quick trailer.
Somewhere I already love in America, this.
A secret war is being waged.
This is a case of national security.
Go. A war of deception.
It's a daylight hit. I come over to talk about the bomb that went off yesterday. I got two people dead.
Fought by a phantom army.
Dude, the soundtrack.
The soundtrack and the non-Don LaFontaine 80s trailer voice act Sergeant announcer.
Let me go for the title call.
Nick Nolte. Extreme Prejudice.
Yeah.
God, that fast typewriter.
Only in the 80s, man. They bother saying the name of the movie.
That is it for the movies.
Yeah, and this sort of, came and went. And
it's not on DVD.
Not on, it briefly American came DVD. On DVD, but full screen and a bad print. And then it's like gone. Like, I can't.
Given the pedigree of everyone involved, it is really not treated that well. Yeah, and I'm assuming there's something redeemable in here. Because Milius was like all about, like, I made this right wing as fuck.
Yeah.
On purpose.
It's going to be about dudes with guns and scratching their balls with their guns, and then they join a militia and they kill everybody with their guns and their balls.
No, I'll watch Red Dawn anytime before, like, Chris Farley's brother did, like, they tried to do, like, right-wing, like, comedy movies. It's like, yeah.
Oh, no, that was one of the
punching.
Abrams down. Or Zucker brothers.
Yes.
An American Carol.
For what it's worth, Secret of My Success is the number one movie.
Hey.
This week, but we have talked about that already.
Secret of My Success!
I didn't say that. I left that as a cliffhanger because the whole song, Night Ranger, says, "The secret of my success is I'm living," and then goes back into the next verse. Very last line is because I'm living 25 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
Invented time travel, Michael J. Fox.
That song has the secret to success inside of it.
Do so much coke that it feels like you have 25 hours in a day.
If you can just learn to bend time.
So TV this week is also kind of lean.
Something gets burgled, I hope.
Carnegie Hall does reopen on television. So Carnegie Hall reopened in December of 86, and they recorded like all of the performances at the inaugural event or reopening, whatever. Mm-hmm. So then, CBS aired a special, the reopening of Carnegie Hall. You know, just a lot of musical performances. Frank Sinatra sings a bunch of shit. But I grabbed a clip where it's just a smattering of celebrities briefly saying, like, what they think of when they think of Carnegie Hall.
Carnegie Hall, in a word, warm. Precious.
Happy.
Glamour.
Glorious.
Resonant.
Proud.
Something for everybody.
It is the best.
It's like a Stradivarius violin.
It's the center of the musical universe.
If I describe anything in one word, that's remarkable.
Oh my God. Okay, I could call two. That was Kissinger at the end. And Lena Horne.
Yeah, I think so.
I could pick her out. She's
and
got
Barbara
a great
Walters was in there.
OJ Simpson?
Yes.
Henry
Kissinger dropped his glasses in the toilet at Carnegie Hall famously.
Good.
I can't tell anybody I've done that. Not me.
They must never know.
What the hell was going on? Like, I know, like, back before the 90s, like, television and movies did kind of come in season bursts and like took time off. Mm-hmm. What the fuck was the world doing at the end of May?
I feel like, well, we're...
Spring break!
Well, this is the end of April.
End of April.
Yeah,
so
end of
May
April.
Is sweep, so they're probably just treading water.
Maybe you're trying to get out of the way of Easter. I don't know. People are traveling and eating
right.
eggs.
Now we, yeah,
all my Easter Miami plans.
Yeah, we got all our season finales coming up in a couple weeks, so that's when things will get crazy. Mm-hmm.
So if you want something a bit less classy, there's Please. Down and Out in Beverly Hills, the TV series, which premiered on Fox on April 26th, 1987.
That's a fast turnaround.
Yes, and this has the distinction of being the first show ever canceled by Fox. So they aired
and the first show we've ever talked about based on a movie we've already talked about.
Yeah, last year.
Also the first Fox show with the word Beverly Hills in it. Arguably the less successful one.
I'd love to hear that argument.
Did Troop Beverly Hills have a show? No, I just saw the movie on Fox.
So they only aired 5 of 13 episodes produced. I have a clip of the show trailer, which was actually hard to find.
I would love to hear this.
Saturday on Fox, a new hour of comedy when Down and Out in Beverly Hills moves to a new time.
I have no problem with that.
When Dave's sister gets left at the altar, guess who catches her on the rebound?
How'd you like to give your future brother-in-law a great big hug, huh?
Then...
Stephen Foreman.
You always did have good taste in men. I guess you get that from your mother.
The show Karen's Songs?
So, just remember, Down and Out in Beverly Hills was a movie about a man who fucks everybody in the house.
Yeah.
A homeless man, played by Nick Nolte.
Yeah, so they replaced, like, Bette Midler and Nick Nolte, Richard Dreyfuss with nobody.
Hector Elizondo.
Hector Elizondo.
Who?
I see him listed.
What? Where?
Hector
when?
Elizondo. You'd recognize Hector Elizondo if you saw him. He's very dependable.
It's a total, hey, it's that guy's in every Gary Marshall movie.
Mm. Mm. I didn't recognize anybody in the trailer, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Hector Elizondo, one of the most prominent bald actors we have.
Yeah.
But yeah, after like a run of like Married with Children, 21 Jump Street, people still remember those. Tracy Ullman, it brought The Simpsons into the world, and it's classic in its own way. And then this.
That's
a movie adaptation that...
That is still quite a fucking streak when you put it like that. Like all their inaugural scripted shows.
The Joan Rivers show's already over, isn't it?
That's true.
But like, there's
Can we
half
talk?
Hour shows.
I guess we can't anymore.
No.
And last and also probably least, April 27th, 1987, NBC airs the TV movie Desperado, where a cowboy fights a mine boss and his henchman in a company-run Arizona town. I included the trailer. Guess what? Guess what song is scoring this trailer?
I know.
Life in the Fast Lane.
Desperado.
He is every man's hidden rage. Every woman's secret desire.
Friday.
Desperado.
Damn it.
Anybody?
Every man's hidden rage, every woman's hidden desire.
You have to realize the Friday guy is attached to a certain network. So anytime...
Well, there's different Friday... Like, it's been all over the place.
No, but a guy who yells Friday...
Like, yeah, but I just like any day call out. Yeah.
You keep crossing your fingers, but like, this is Fox. You're not going to hear it.
That's not Fox. That's NBC. Fox isn't going to air the erotic Western movie Desperado.
Can S sell Desperado?
Yeah.
Antonio Banderas? Si o no?
No.
No. Alex MacArthur. David Warner is in it.
Hey, David Warner. Yeah. I bet he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And Yaphet Kotto from Running Man.
Awesome. I love Yaphet Kotto.
Games, nothing.
Really?
Yeah, there's nothing going on in video games right now. The NES is still fairly quiet. It's, you know, we've talked about what we could. Talked about a few arcade games rolling out this year. Taking us out of the 80s in this quiet week. Some new albums for our music section. The Legacy, Testament debut thrash metal band. Testament being the band name.
Oh, okay.
And they are a thrash metal band with the debut album, The Legacy. These are just interchangeable nouns.
How ironic.
Yeah.
It's not ringing a bell.
The Ultraviolence, another thrash metal band from this time from the Bay Area called Death Angel. Let Me Up, I've Had Enough, Tom Petty's seventh studio album. I think was made to sound live, but isn't. Jammin' Me was co-written by Bob Dylan, one of the songs on the album. Introduce Yourself, Faith No More's second album that allegedly has better mixing than their prior one. Includes a better version of their song We Care A Lot.
Did you talk to Pat about this?
I didn't, because I figured their big one is coming up in a few years. And then finally, Never Let Me Down, David Bowie's 17th album.
Wow.
Was certified gold, has the title track Day In and Day Out. kind of a mixed reception, like a lot of his 80s stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of whatever, and I don't think any of these songs stuck with people, but Bowie is one of those people who we've mentioned in the 80s and 90s, and I don't think we've got to a 2006 or 7 album yet. Mm-hmm. But
well, not an album, but we had Prestige.
He wasn't Prestige. So, he's all over.
He's been all over it.
If Bowie's singing something in the 80s, it definitely helps if he's singing to a goblin or a baby. That raises it like 2 points in my book.
Yeah. That or just Modern Love, man. But we'll go out with the title track, Never Let Me Down, from David Bowie. We'll be back this same week, 1997. Never let me down.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
I had a slam banging weekend, saw a ton of people, old GR friends, Charlie and Cherry. That was
nice.
Like, I didn't really invite Charlie over as much as he said, we paid for a babysitter and we're going to do shit.
Right.
But it's like, we have one night, we're forcing ourselves.
Oh, yeah,
somebody.
I would absolutely.
Thank God
like,
you did.
Whose house is open? Because I'm going to be in it very soon.
It really brought me back to like, who moved out right away? Man, let's go over there. What is he doing? Let's all meet over at his house, whether he likes it or not.
I lived in a house towards the end of my Illinois run where it was like, yeah, just come over whenever. And then it was, oh, good. I'm glad there's always a party here. I would like come out of my room, be like, there's 50 people here. Mm. I don't know most of them. And like, then there's one point cops show up because they're like, yeah, we got a report. I'm like, from who? I couldn't hit a neighbor's house with a football. But then they're like, we heard there's a report of underage drinking. And I'm like, no. Literally everybody get out of my house right now.
I know we had a dumb, the cops can't say anything if you have a sign in your door that says no one drinking under 21. Like, there's no way that's the law.
That's
like,
not
that
the law.
I can Mario paint out a picture that says no one under 21. I'm under 21.
Yeah.
Like, that is impossible. And the picture
no,
was my friend in like full balaclava and Kevlar holding a shotgun to my head as I presented my ID. Someday I want to find that picture. It was great.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
That is Erasure.
What year is this?
Yeah, are you sure we're in 1997?
That is, believe it or not, 1997.
That
Erasure.
Is every Erasure song.
It is.
Everyone.
From their album Cowboy, came out this week in 1997. It's their eighth studio album, obviously very popular in the 80s, Erasure.
Yep.
But also out this week, Carrying Your Love With Me from George Strait. And I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One, Yola Tengo.
Oh.
Rated one of the 90s best albums, and it sold 100 billion copies. But none of those songs rang any bells to me somehow. And then also Share My World, Mary J. Blige's third album, out this week. News really quick, on April 21st, the ashes of Gene Roddenberry and Timothy Leary were launched into space.
Yay.
And, separately? Are they racing? Yeah. That'd be great.
They're going to try to wrap around the world fast enough to rotate time backwards.
I love the idea that like aliens will find Gene Roddenberry's ashes and it'll somehow blow their mind with space travel.
But Gene Roddenberry will come into the 80s segment in just a couple weeks because they are about to announce the cast of Star Trek The Next Generation
really?
In 1987.
Huh.
But Gene Roddenberry, obviously Mr. Star Trek, from the 60s all the way up until the last minute. When he died in bed, just having finished watching Star Trek 5 or 6.
Killed him.
Was he dead before Next Gen had just gone? Like had
no,
essentially
it was
gone.
It was in its fifth season.
Okay.
Because it was 87 to 94.
We're 97. I got it.
Yes.
I'm back. I'm
and
back.
Timothy
I'm
Leary, listening. He sang the song Asshole, right?
No! That's Dennis Leary. Timothy Leary, I don't know if invented, but pioneered LSD.
Ah.
Movies this week, two fun ones for very different reasons.
Yeah.
First with a quick trailer.
Meet Romy and Michelle.
Remember that time I barfed from really bad Mexican food? So gross.
I hate throwing up in public. Oh,
me too! Oh.
They walk the walk.
God, this underwear is totally riding up my butt.
They talk the talk.
Romy, did you lose weight? Oh. All I've had to eat for the past 6 days are gummy bears, jelly beans, and candy corn. God, I wish I had your discipline.
This
love this movie.
Yeah,
like, Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
I've only seen it twice, but I love movies like this, yeah. Like just these outlandish characters that anchor an entire film.
Yeah,
and people, I think, were pretty rude to the movie when it was released, and it slowly gained some steam.
Yeah, I think it did okay. I mean, it's obviously it's got a pretty limited budget, so yeah. It's easy to make its money back. But yeah, it definitely grew from there.
And it's still kind
of
growing.
I didn't see it in theaters. Mm-hmm. It was airing on the movie channel when I got it in like the summer of 97 or 98. And it would be on like once a day, and I would mm-hmm. usually just end up watching it. And it's just so funny because those two, they're both hilarious. Lisa Kudrow, Mira Sorvino. They just have their own kind of unique comedic chemistry with each other that I really love, and so many classic lines.
I'm not a Friends fan. The only thing I like about Friends is Lisa Kudrow.
She's the best.
And oh my God, what's the show, the HBO show they brought back? The Comeback. Really fucking good. And this was written by Robin Schiff. Mm-hmm. It was a play, and she's one of the groundlings, as was Lisa Kudrow. So she had played this in a play as far back as like 1989, pre-Friends.
Yeah. Damn.
And then played the same character in a pilot that didn't go for these characters as well. And then eventually this movie happened.
So the premise is that they're two LA kind of like fashion hipsters.
Wonderfully ditzy. But, clueless, hilarious, talkative.
And they're about to go to their high school reunion. They're embarrassed that they haven't done much since in the 10 years since they graduated.
And there's no internet yet, so they make up anything they want.
Yeah, so I included another clip where they're on their way to the reunion, and they figure, like, we have to pretend we're businesswomen. Mm-hmm. Their very first attempt at being businesswomen is ordering food at a restaurant as businesswomen.
Yeah, hello. We need something to go.
Okay.
Do you have some sort of businesswoman special?
Come again?
Well, we're businesswomen.
Yeah, from LA.
And you know, some places have like a lunch special
for businesswomen.
We don't have anything like that.
Well, then why don't you just give us two burgers and fries and Diet Cokes, because we're in a hurry.
Her delivery is straight up Garth.
I love meat, like... My older brother and I would always quote Mira Sorvino. Mm. Like, everything she says, just that inflection is
it's great.
Yeah.
This is the female Bill and Ted.
Special.
Yeah. That's good. I watched this last night because this is one of these movies that was really popular. I was in college at this point, and it was sort of like, it looks okay. Mm-hmm. And since then, it's like, everyone loves it. It's super nostalgic for it.
It's still really
cool. I watched
it.
Yeah.
And it is really funny. Mm-hmm. It's weird in that there's a very long fake out in the middle of the movie. I can spoil. It's 20 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're going to the reunion and they get to the reunion. You know, things do not go well. And then, like, the guy that had a crush on Michelle shows up and he's got a ton of plastic surgery and he's a billionaire and everything goes great. And then they leave. And it turns out, that was a dream. That, like, 20 minutes or something.
Yeah.
All right, we're starting over. Here's what really happened.
Yeah. I saw this for the first time probably 2 or 3 years ago, and it was still really fun.
There's
a big flashback sequence too when they're in high school and like how I think it was Lisa Kudrow's character had like a back brace so with the magnets on it, and there's also Janine Garofalo's great in this.
Yes.
Fuck you, Toby.
Yeah.
That was one thing I was surprised at because I saw it was rated R, and I'm like, why is this R? It's just because they say fuck like 5 times.
Yeah. But it's earned because those fucks really hurt Cameron Mannheim every time she hears it.
Yeah, that's true.
And
she's fun.
Post-it stuff's great.
I just thinking about this, I was really bummed out there was never any follow-up.
There was
a prequel
with Katherine Heigl and somebody else.
Alexandra Breckenridge and Katherine Heigl in the Romy and Michelle roles. But it is, like, if you Googled it like I did, that very day there was news of casting for the musical adaptation, which is occurring right now.
Yeah. But also, like, as a person who was... Spoiler, I wasn't popular in high school. Like,
what?
A movie about going back to high school and, like learning, like, not everybody's perfect. And as long as you do you...
Grow up to be a hot blonde.
Yeah, then, you know, why... bother about anything else at the, yeah, from high this, school.
I feel like this person like tapped into my brain because it was like every reason to not go to your high school reunion is depicted. All the things I've thought of. People being really... that everyone is going to be there trying to impress everybody else.
Yeah.
People being really smug about having kids for some reason. Like, that's a fucking accomplishment. And just, you know, people like me feeling like I have to impress people, but not. And then seeing someone I had a crush on and it just everything coming back.
Well, I'm glad the high school I graduated from is out of business. So there will be no reunion.
Yep. I flirted with the idea of going to my high school reunion until I saw it was $80 with a cash bar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. I spent time with these people when I was legally obligated.
Yeah.
Now I'm a grown-ass adult, and I am not doing it without, like, four drinks in my hand.
Yeah, if I want to see these people, I'll go to the goddamn line dancing bar and talk about how all of them started hoverboard dealerships. Great.
But, I would say this is probably my top five favorite comedies of all time.
Wow.
Also, like, one of my girlfriend's favorite movies, and for Halloween last year, we went to karaoke. She went, and one of her best friends, who also loves the movie, they went as Romeo and Michelle, and they did Time After Time and did the whole dance that they do in the movie with Alan Cumming.
That was the biggest surprise of this movie. Yeah. The completely insane dance number.
Yeah.
That was fucking hilarious.
It probably inspired the adapting it to a musical.
No, but there's a point where it's like, you know, now we'll finally have our day on. So it's like, oh, but my friend is sad. You know, you have to dance with her too. Okay. And you think, oh, they're just going to sort of slow dance in a circle and it'll be nice and romantic. No, they do this like impressionistic ballet number. It's so, so weird.
I
should mention directed by David Merkin.
Yes, David Merkin. We just talked about him on Talking Simpsons because he kind of left running that show, handed it over to Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein. We just talked to Bill Oakley on Talking Simpsons, and this is kind of the first thing he did after that.
This is the beginning, the end of the era of The Simpsons I like.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it is. Because he was still on board as a consultant.
Right, but I mean, this is season 8 of Simpsons, and that's the last season I enjoyed.
Romy and Michelle are kind of like fashionable, hot female Homers in that, like, half the stuff they say is completely stupid, and half of the stuff they say is completely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hard pivot for the other movie. That this is the movie I saw opening weekend.
Of course it was.
And remember seeing the poster for Romeo and Michelle as I walked out and being like, oh, they're both hot. What's the movie about? Then I didn't see it for 10 years.
I don't know, but is the coast going to be toast?
There are at least 1,500 active volcanoes in the world that we know about.
Oh, my God.
And at least one.
Uh-huh.
That we don't.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
And oh, wait. Explosion? And chaos ensues. So this is a movie about the La Brea tar pits explode, basically, and have an unending pile of lava that shoots up out of it.
Yeah.
And Tommy Lee Jones...
That's where I learned L.A. had a subway.
Yeah.
Wait, how does the magma flow anywhere? Because isn't LA just so super flat?
That's part of it. Like,
but then there's hills.
Except when shit explodes and like fires out of the volcano, it is a monster moving 1 mile an hour.
Yeah,
just lava lightly trickling down Wilshire Boulevard. Yeah, one of the biggest sets ever made. They like recreated Wilshire Boulevard.
It's such a strange premise because this is again we just did a latest time about twin movies.
Yes,
two movies that have very similar premises, which. We just talked about Dante's Peak a couple weeks ago and had very little to say because it's like, it's a movie about a volcano that explodes.
This is a movie about a volcano.
It's a good B movie.
It's the more proficient movie.
This is fun.
Yeah, this is fun bad. I had a great time watching it, and then I watched it again almost 20 years later, so probably like 3 years ago at this point, and I was just like hitting my knee at how silly. Like, Tommy Lee Jones is like a scientist, or I forget what he is. Mm-hmm. He's like a director of office emergency management.
Why don't you search in every volcano, tornado, tomato?
Keith David, Don Cheadle, Anne Aish. Yep. A lot of fun people in this movie, but like with no cool cone of a volcano and no like really dramatic destruction. It's like,
who's the last guy you kill?
Like,
with a volcano.
Usually in monster movies or disaster movies, there's like, oh, that famous building eats it, or the monster looks neat or has scary attributes. This is like, Yeah,
they survived.
Like occasionally, like a fire hydrant shoots out of the ground, and like a building kind of tumbles a little. It's like a very strange way to.
Well, yeah, part of their problem is they play kid logic with the lava. It's like it's fine until you touch it. It's
like, yes,
that's right.
It's literally you can hover like 6 inches above it.
You're on fire.
Just jump on your couch. You're fine.
You're
Anything
fine.
Breath of the Wild taught me is if you're within 900 miles of lava, you burst into flames.
You gotta get that metal suit.
I
just thought, like,
but it does play with old school disaster movie rules in that you've got groups of people here and there, and they gotta do stuff. Of course, you gotta have a rich guy and the symbol of man's hubris that you know is going to be destroyed at the end.
Yes.
We're gonna harness the volcano. Yes, I'm just imagining. Is that really true? Yes.
Unlimited power from the earth itself.
I detonated the volcano in the La Brea Tar Pits to build a mini mall.
So
now this land will be mine, and then I'll take away the rec center.
These homeless kids will. But there's another clip here.
The orphans will work for me.
The west side is a million people.
There are going to be a million dead people if we don't evacuate. When Mount St. Helens blew, the force was greater than the Hiroshima bomb.
Moses couldn't reroute this. It's everywhere.
There's not enough time.
This is going to destroy everything it touches.
Yeah.
Where anything can happen. This year. It will.
Please stay calm.
It's astonishing.
And then they got to throw in like the post riot, post OJ Simpson, like anti racism message.
It is.
Oh, Lord.
Like when that comes out of nowhere, like my jaw hit the floor.
I
was 16, I didn't really, I was just like, I don't get it, whatever. And then watching it again a few years ago, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Like after the hackiest, silliest B minus movie you've ever watched in your life, which is still really fun because it's so ridiculous.
It's so stupid.
And I looked at the.
Ashes rain from the sky, as will happen after a huge eruption.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone is covered in ashes.
Oh, God, that's right.
Everyone's gray.
Oh, God.
And now, no, skin color doesn't matter, bro.
That is
everyone's gray.
Ask a kid, hey, where's your mom? What does she look like? And they all look the same.
Rod Serling would have thrown out that Twilight Zone script immediately.
Like the black guy and the cop look at each other like,
yeah, man. We all bleed red.
We're all pink on the inside.
Gray lives matter, man.
Is there a foreign war we can unite over?
I just saw that it was directed by Mick Jackson. I'm like, why does that name sound familiar? Because there's two directors with the oddest bio ever in this. Mick Jackson directed my personal favorite Steve Martin movie, L.A. Story, which is a really wacky, absurdist comedy in the same locations.
I'm thinking this is the sequel.
And then moved on to The Bodyguard.
Oh.
And then moved on to Dana Carvey's Clean Slate, where Dana Carvey gets amnesia and does impressions. Then The Volcano. That's a diverse body of work.
Wow.
For what it's worth, this is the first movie that I remember seeing when it came up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Fox movie,
mm-hmm.
but it's from Fox 2000.
Yes.
Not 20th Century Fox. Like it's the first movie I remember seeing that put that up.
That's like a sub.
Yeah.
Distribution channel thing.
Yeah. It's the first Fox 2000 picture that I remember seeing. I don't know if it is, in fact, the first.
Probably not. But, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I remember I watched this, and I feel bad. Like, I've told the story when I saw 300, I was glad I saw it in IMAX because I was cackling so loud that no one could hear me. This one, I was full De Niro in Cape Fear without the cigar. I was cackling so fucking hard every time. Because there's, like, lots of little L.A. in jokes there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's the Evangeline billboard gets blown up, and I'm just like, ah! Fuck you, L.A.!
But that's it for movies, thankfully.
Good times.
Just these two wildly different things.
And it will not get better than that, so tune out of the third segment if you have to.
But this was a big week for TV comedies. I didn't put this one in here. On April 22nd, the Frasier episode Ham Radio airs.
This is one of the best episodes of Frasier, honestly. I threw this in there.
Do like a old school radio thing or something?
Yeah, he is put in charge of doing this old school radio murder mystery play. And everything goes wrong, and he can't get the actors he wants, and he tries to overdirect everybody, and it's one of those like episodes of Frasier, it's kind of a bottle episode, but not really, that they just do so well, where it was sort of like this absurdist stage play that's also a sitcom. So, a little clip.
Suddenly,
the storm put the lights out. And we were left in darkness. Then a scream.
Ah! Look out! He's got a nug!
And he looks like beyond upset.
Yeah, I wanted to put it in there, but it's too visual point where his brother Niles just gives up and just grabs a bunch of balloons that they're using for gunshots and is like, and then he grabbed the gun and he shot the maid, bang, and then he shot Mr. Willington, bang, and this guy, bang, and the butler, bang, and then, oh no, one left for himself, bang, the end.
The one thing that would have made that scene better is if Fraser and Niles' dad was sitting on his couch in that radio station doing a play with them. No, I don't want to do it. But other NBC comedies this week, the Friends episode, The One with the Screamer, guest stars Ben Stiller as Rachel's new boyfriend. Since it's Ben Stiller and the late 90s, he yells a lot. He is the screamer of this episode.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I think you may be in our seats.
No, I don't think so. Can we take a look at your ticket?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, see, this says D13, and...
Oh, well, I thought that,
Huh? Yeah, well, that didn't really work out too well for it, did you, idiot?
What are you, a moron, huh? It says D13, okay? Look, you're surrounded by even numbers. Does that give you some clue? The usher told him.
Well, the usher must be right. What with all the training they go through? Get out!
Yeah. This is him in, what is it, Billy Madison, and then Dodgeball, Heavyweights.
Oh, now your back's going to hurt.
Yeah. It's a real forte of that era.
I sort of realized, you know, when we do our Willie Tanner from Alf impression, there's a lot of David Schwimmer in there, too. I'm actually such a wiener.
I really love you, Rachel. Please don't date that guy. I love you more.
I'll kill my monkey in front of everyone.
I can't believe to star in The Pallbearer.
That very same night, April 24th, 1997, the Seinfeld episode The Yada Yada airs.
Mm.
And I mean, the title itself, it's another attempt. I mean, even though people were saying yada yada way beforehand, but this is another attempt of Seinfeld to put a new word in the lexicon, like sponge-worthy, no soup for you. And of course, like, the yada yada is a big part of the episode in that George has a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. She uses the phrase yada yada to jump over parts of stories. Mm-hmm. And he starts using it too to talk about how his wife died. So you just say yada yada, we're no longer together. She, at one point, he thinks that she yada yados over a sexual encounter she may have had while still dating George. So if you play the yada yada sex clip.
Listen to this. Marcy comes over and she tells me that her ex-boyfriend was over late last night and yada yada yada, I'm really tired today. You don't think she'd yada yada sex?
I've yada yada'd sex.
Really?
I met this lawyer, we went out to dinner, I had the lobster bisque, we went back to my place, yada, yada, yada. I never heard from him again.
But you yada, yada over the best part.
No, I mentioned the bisque.
Yes. Yeah.
But my favorite part of the episode is Jerry's storyline in that he believes his dentist, who's played by Bryan Cranston. Walter White.
That's like the ninth time he played the dentist. Yes. I just rewatched the series on Hulu to altogether.
Tim Watley, I believe is his name. He believes that his dentist has converted to Judaism strictly for the jokes. And I have one clip where he does a Jewish joke while Jerry's at his dentist appointment.
Here we go. That Rich reminds me, did you hear the one about the rabbi and the farmer's daughter? Huh? Those aren't matzo balls.
What? Tim, do you think you should be making jokes like that?
Why not? I'm Jewish, remember?
I know, but
Jerry, it's our sense of humor that sustained us as a people for 3,000 years.
5,000.
5,000, even better.
Yeah, that's great.
Closer to 6.
Bryan Cranston.
Rabbit anti-dentite.
Bryan Cranston is not the only great guest star in this episode. I also have the very end of the episode where it's, I believe, Mickey's wedding. He's like the little person who's friends with Kramer.
Yeah.
And Mickey's father gets angry at Jerry for his anti-dentist jokes. Anti-dentite jokes. And there's another slip in here, too.
Hi, Mr. Abbott.
That's Dr. Abbott, DDS. Tim Watley was one of my students. And if this wasn't my son's wedding day, I'd knock your teeth out, you anti-dentite bastard.
His girlfriend's Deborah Messing.
I said something about dentists and it got blown all out of proportion.
Hey, what do you call a doctor who fails out of med school?
What?
A dentist.
Wait, the kicker is very, this is the very end of the episode, like a...
dentist.
Yeah, who needs them? Not to mention the blacks and the Jews.
Yes, and then it just, the baseline screams in.
It's like, so she's a year or two away from becoming Grace from Will and Grace, but yeah. Like...
And then his face like, oh good!
What a great punctuation on anti-Semitism.
Yes. Well, if you want some more tolerance, let's go over to The Simpsons, which aired the episode in Marge We Trust. Again, that's not the biggest thing about the episode. Marjorie We Trust, that's when she becomes the listen lady for the church, and she overshadows Reverend Lovejoy. But what everyone remembers about this episode is Mr. Sparkle, Homer, noticing that a Japanese ad mascot looks exactly like him. I didn't include a clip of the commercial because it's all in Japanese and it's very visual.
But he's a Brave corporate logo.
Yes.
I just love the line, could you do any less?
Yes. But I do have a clip.
Join me or die.
I do have a clip of when he calls the Mr. Sparkle company to, and I think this is Getty Watanabe he's talking to.
Oh, nice.
Moshi moshi.
Yes, this is Homer Simpson from America. Who may I say is speaking to me?
Hello, Chief. Let's talk, why not?
Hello? Why am I Mr. Sparkle?
You like Mr. Sparkle?
Well, I am Mr. Sparkle.
You have many questions, Mr. Sparkle. I send you a premium answer question, 100%.
I love whenever it shows like it's a merger that makes the logo. Yes. It's like a fish and a light bulb. Yes.
And we do a show called Talking Simpsons on the Laser Time Network every Wednesday, and we did one fish, two fish, the poison blowfish, and then that the Simpsons writers were always really careful when they're casting. They cast Japanese people to play Japanese characters for some. They made it a point from the beginning. Well, they didn't do it with a lot of other characters.
That's true.
But when dealing with the Japanese, that like George Takei was the original Akira. I think Hank Azaria took over eventually.
My skilled hands are busy.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is like veering on the edge of my like. I thought Mr. Sparkle was funny once, and then like the second time I saw it, I'm like, okay. And then it just became.
I think next week is your one of your lesser favorite episodes.
We'll get there.
Yes. And moving on from intentional comedy to unintentional comedy, on April 27th, the same night as The Simpsons, The Shining miniseries airs.
Holy shit!
With Wings is it Tim?
Stephen
Daly?
Weber.
No, Stephen Weber.
And Cortland Mead's mouth.
Ugh, that kid is so.
That
ugh.
Kid.
Ugh. That, ugh. That and Rebecca DeHornay.
Seize your destiny, Mr. Torrance.
Jack?
Coming, sweetheart.
Ain't gonna hurt me, Daddy.
Come down here and take your medicine!
Oh, my God.
You're never taking my son!
This spring...
Rosie!
Go to hell. And pray you get out alive. Rebecca De Mornay, Stephen Weber.
Daddy's mad at Mommy!
Stephen King's The Shining.
This is Stephen King's favorite version of The Shining, by the way.
Right. Well, this is his authorized version.
Thankfully, I'm here having read the book and seen both movies.
Yes, me too.
This is the only bad. This is the only bad version. Mm-hmm. But that King hated Kubrick's Shining so much.
What did Kubrick change then? Like
a lot.
Yeah. Okay, because like the trailer, I guess because they want people who watch the old movie to watch this, because it's like I didn't see that much. Different, like it didn't seem like they deviated.
I felt that was a young man. Stephen King complaining initially was a young man's ego. Mm-hmm. He changed too much. I'm like, but he made it. He really put his own spin on it. Your finale is a boiler room exploding. Like that's what he built tension. Like there's an atmosphere that exists in Kubrick's Shining that's not in your book.
Yeah,
and it's really fun.
I think one of his big complaints, I can totally agree with him on that, is that
faking the moon landing.
No, that Nicholson's crazy from the first frame. He seems already nuts.
Yeah.
And the whole book is about, you know, a good guy, and it's all a metaphor for alcoholism. His alcoholism is causing all of these problems. Yeah. And then that's the thing that makes him weak, that the hotel can start exploiting.
Yes, yeah. And that there was literally a character named Tony instead of his finger yelling, talking to Danny at all times, and this version, there's a floating child.
I hate to blame the kid
on screen.
But
and you remember that who Tony really is. It's really Danny in the future.
This version is so bad.
Yeah, it's
no hedge maze. You don't get that.
No, no. The live topiary. The topiary comes to life, tries to eat him. Yeah,
I did watch this whole thing for some reason.
Yeah,
yeah. I watched it twice because I wrote a massive paper about The Shining, and so I feel like I saw it yesterday.
No, why did I talk so much then?
I don't know. Well, you saw it too. It's fine.
Yeah. But like,
we need Chris's white man perspective.
Yeah,
exactly. I didn't write a paper on
the mid to late 90s. Were like
no,
a gold...
I wrote like a 40-page paper.
I wrote a short story about Stephen King writing The Shining and how someone's going to make a much better movie, and you're going to get infuriated.
But man, the mid to late 90s was like a golden era of Stephen King made for TV miniseries that were either good in the case of It or
The Langoliers,
or so bad it's good,
Langoliers.
Langoliers and this. Like, you can enjoy everything on some level. Either turn your brain off or it's actually pretty decent.
But It is like early 90s, right?
I mean, yeah, so the 90s in total. But
still, there's not a lot of authors that even had this luxury.
He's very prolific, man. What a treasure to us all. Mm-hmm. God bless
really
Stephen
is.
King.
Love Stephen King.
I'm adopting some personality.
Did you see that trailer for the Hulu, like J.J. Abrams Hulu series that's just like a fucking Stephen King universe where Pennywise and Kathy Bates exist together?
Finally.
I don't know why I'm strangely excited
about
that.
I was hoping they'd get together.
But when do they meet Megatron? That's when I get
Man,
excited.
That cast. Like, I like Wings. I'm going to just say it. I like Wings. That's but fine. Steven Weber, like, he can't play that role. We spent 10 years, he's been the goofy brother in this show about pilots. So
he's found latter-day success playing an asshole executive, but not a raging person who can rage like Danny Torrance needs to.
Yeah.
And that kid just like disappeared after he turned like 11 years old. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, save your time, just read the book.
Yeah. That's all for TV, right?
Yeah.
It's a fast read anyway. You probably read it in the amount of time it takes to watch
the Or watch the movie and see a bear give a blowjob.
Yeah, that too.
Games this week in 1997, still nothing really. The N64, as we've talked about, it has a very slow drip feed. Saturn is sort of dead already in a sense, but PlayStation's also quiet this week, it would seem. But since next week has a little bit more to talk about, I did go ahead and say a Saturn game that did come out in this week later, but just to put it where it would get a little more time, is Fighters Megamix, which is a one-on-one fighting game from the Virtua Fighter people. So if you remember Virtua Fighter 1, 2, 3, and all that.
That's insane.
It has the craziest cast of characters, where it's the Virtua Fighter cast, Fighting Vipers cast, people from Virtua Cop 2, the car from Daytona, USA, that stands on its hind wheels.
Stands on its wheels and punches with wheels. it's awesome.
A palm tree, and a bean wearing a sombrero.
There's another character named Bean, but that is a duck.
Well, from that's Sonic Fighters.
But that's so weird that there's a Bean, but there's also a character named Bean,
the
who isn't a Bean.
The palm tree, I think, is from the AM2
logo,
who designed all these games, and it's this weird thing of, like, Sega still simultaneously developing all these arcade games, which you can't really justify putting on a console for full price, because we all know arcade experiences are supposed to be a little shorter, a little harder.
So is this a fighting game?
It's a fighting game
where you can fight as a palm tree fighting a bean wearing a sombrero?
It's a fighting game that uses all the assets they've kind of forged in this engine for the arcades and takes, like, 7 arcade games characters and puts them together into one game, including Virtua Fighter and Virtua Fighter Kids. That's the
Kids
they sold a big head mode for Virtua Fighter.
But with those, it's like the physics is different because they've got big heads and it's offset.
And we've talked about VF Kids on this show, and I think we've talked about other games that we've already mentioned, but they kind of all mash them in here. And I remember this getting coverage in GamePro and EGM at the time. That's Electronic Gaming Monthly, if you need to be reminded. Yeah. But this got a lot of coverage, and it did very well in Japan, but I think by the time it came to the U.S. to Saturn, it's like...
The writing was on the wall in the Saturn.
Saturn's kind of done what it's going to do at this point.
I mean, I was super tempted to get this game. Like, I didn't have a Saturn, but like reading about it in Game Players Magazine, I was like, because the year before, 1996, I was super into Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which was broken as hell.
It's super busted.
But it is just like a Vegas buffet of like, there's 50 different characters here, and sometimes when you put them together, they taste really bad.
They don't make any sense.
But you're just going to be stuffed full of fighting game fun, and this game was like, holy shit, there's even crazier stuff, like a tree fighting a bean, who's a duck.
A duck.
Like, I want this game so bad, and I think I eventually got it, you know, when I picked up a Saturn years later, but
I wish they did more games like this. For the first time in my life, it seemed like, well, just because you are a fan of console video games doesn't mean you've ever set foot in an arcade.
Yeah.
And that was the big sell on this. Like, here's all these things from arcade games and some Saturn ports put together to one game, kind of unimpressively.
Yeah.
And the world didn't seem to care. Yeah. And it had no... It's called Fighters Mega Mix. Yep. That's just the official name.
Yep.
So I don't even know how you'd... I remember not, like, knowing this existed and didn't know the name of it.
Yeah. This was also weirdly, like... The Virtua Fighter characters that were in this game, they had their Virtua Fighter 3 movesets. So Virtua Fighter 3 never came to Saturn, but one of the things they said, like, hey, you can play as their Virtua Fighter 3 sort of characters in Fighters Mega Mix, just making the game even more broken. Like, let's put completely new movesets in this game that has tons of characters that are
unbalanced.
It's almost
as if this is done the same engine within an 8-month period.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a, like, you could tell they're like, this is our big send-off, and we're done.
And this is the era where, like, for me, the number of fighters in a game, like, that... If it had, like, more than 20, I'm like, I'm playing it. I want to try everybody.
Without, like, a friend to play with, you dig through the single-player mode. I'll beat the game with every character.
Yep. I can't tell if the title is, like, a mix CD or, like, a dog food.
It's a little of both. Okay. But we'll go out of the 1997 segment with Romeo and Michelle singing Time After Time.
Yay.
And when we come back this week, 2007. Time after time. If you fall, I will catch you, I'll be waiting. Time after time. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time. If you fall, I will catch you, I'll be waiting. Time after time.
Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner, where we look even further back in time this week to see if there's any movies worth watching. And April 21st through 27th, we got two, actually. 75 years ago this week, April 22nd, 1942, Alfred Hitchcock's Saboteur comes out. I'm still amazed at how fast America got into World War II-themed movies, because we only got into it in December, and now we're in April, and we're making movies about Saboteur and the war effort and spies and stuff. And it's pretty good. I mean, Hitchcock had a lot of running themes in all his movies, and the wrongly accused guy being hunted, that's a big one. And it's a lot of fun with Robert Cummings and Norman Lloyd, who, knock on wood, still with us at 102 years old. He's the old dude in Trainwreck. 102, God bless him. Anyway, a couple people have been asking, hey, how come you don't do things from 40 years ago? And I'm like, well, I'm trying to keep it to 50 and 75, but... I've caved. I'm looking into movies from 40 years ago, 1977, and that's why we have the absolute number one recommendation this week, 40 years ago, this week, April 21st, 1977, Annie Hall debuts Woody Allen's finest film. It's a great movie if you don't like Woody Allen, and I understand why you wouldn't like Woody Allen. In this movie, he's particularly unlikable, and that's the point. He's filled with neurosis and self-loathing. He is not the hero. He's an asshole. And it's so good, because it's a relatable relationship movie that's also funny as hell. So if you've ever had a good relationship, a bad relationship, trying to get to know somebody, you'll totally relate. And you probably fall in love with Diane Keaton, because she's adorable. And if you haven't seen Annie Hall, totally worth watching. Transcends pretty much just about everybody. Everyone's going to find something to like in it. I watched it with a bunch of exchange students. Like, it was a German guy, an Italian lesbian, and a Scottish dude, and they all laughed themselves sick. And there were jokes they didn't even get. We got to stop the movie, and I could explain to them why you don't eat pastrami on white bread with mayo. It's fun. It's wonderful. Annie Hall, if you haven't watched it, you owe it to yourself. Like I said, hold your nose if you have a problem with Woody Allen, and just watch the movie. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Let rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. Chocolate rain. A baby born will die before the sin chocolate rain.
Uploaded 10 years ago.
Tay Zonday's
Chocolate Rain.
He holds his head away from the microphone to breathe.
Yeah, man.
We could all learn.
We should do that. It'll put weird pauses in, but
or at least burp.
It's worth it.
But that bring us into 2007. Man, that's 10 years old.
Yeah. 10 years old.
Related because it is music, and other new albums this week include Ain't Nothing Like Me, Joe's sixth album, Natasha Bedingfield's second album called NB, and Find Your Own Way Home, REO Speedwagon's 15th studio album.
Jeez. We were so excited.
This is another one. I think they've popped up in every segment.
Yeah. I wrote down the lineup was Kevin, Dave, Neil, Bruce, Brian. I don't know how that relates to REO Speedwagon's history of numerous lineups or whatever. But yeah. Flowing into news, though, is Internet Classic has been uploaded 10 years ago.
That's
Chocolate Rain, which
was one of the first huge viral things.
Yeah. Especially songs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not even
a set
that,
of
like,
all your bass.
It's not that it's like so terrible, but it is hypnotic.
Yeah.
It is.
And like he's still doing stuff. I know that because he follows me on Twitter, and I followed him back because it was like that'd be rude. He follows like 500,000 people. Mm. He's like right. It's I think in the same boat as like David Hasselhoff, where it's just like some bot subscribed him to all these people, but it's like. Yeah, he still looks like young, as young as he did 10 years ago and still sings and does all that stuff.
He's one of those people, I can't tell if he's a good sport or he's desperate, and it's probably both, because he'll show up to anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he was on the Jack and Triumph show.
Jack and Triumph show.
He would pop up, I think, on The Soup every now and then. They would have him on. Mm-hmm. You know, just anytime you need him, he'll just show up and just be like, yep, I'm the butt of the joke. Hi, how are you? Yeah. I'm happy to be here.
He must be raking in the YouTube monies. I just saw the view count on that is 111 million.
Wow.
Oof.
Dude, this has captions in French, Hebrew, Italian, Vietnamese, Spanish, Portuguese, Dutch, Swedish, French, Finnish, Thai, German, Indonesian, Polish, English, Turkish, Russian, Arabic.
I'm sure it translates into every language immaculately.
Perfectly. The first line is always Chocolate Rain.
Yeah.
So he mentions like, Creative Commons. I don't know how long this will be up. Like, was it an existing song that he sang?
I want to say it's his.
I thought it was too, because it's like this MP3 is subject to Creative Commons license. I'm not sure how long-term commercial rights to the song will develop, but all commercial rights are generally reserved. So I guess it is, his.
Yeah.
It's been 10 years since it's been in my mind, but
man,
what a weird song.
I would say in a year's time, there will be more views on that than people who voted in the last election.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Moving into movies this week, this lineup of movies.
Terrible.
The Condemned.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
You and the others will be taken to an island where you will fight against each other. If you're the last one left alive, after 30 hours, I will set you free with a pocket full of cash. How's that sound?
Oh, what's this got to do with TV?
Wait, keep going.
It's a Not pocket TV. Full of ones, though.
The internet. I'll be streaming the entire event live across the World Wide Web.
The World
Rap Sheet's a little thing.
Wide Web.
Jack Conrad.
Stone Cold, say something!
He doesn't say
something. Stop a mud hole in him!
What?
But The Condemned with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Maybe the first WWE Studios movie, isn't that?
I don't think so.
Oh, they may co-produce some of The Rock stuff, like
Scorpion King.
But this is like their first attempt to make Stone Cold Steve Austin a movie star after The Rock hit it big.
Who was pleasantly now reluctant. Like, the Stone Cold... Is there any wrestler more famous than Stone Cold Steve Austin? More successful?
I mean, The Rock.
The Rock,
and
yes.
Hulk Hogan. But Stone Cold, he basically brought the... Like, the WWE was in dire straits in the mid-90s.
Yes,
I don't know if I'm watching the documentary.
Actually, I can think of something. John Cena!
But he could be in movies if he wanted to. And I think he talks about doing this because he was injured and couldn't wrestle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had retired 3 or 4 years earlier.
But clearly has no interest. And I kind of like that about
it. I want to watch this again because it just... It ties together so many things I love. Mm-hmm. Like Battle Royale, Running Man...
Rips
Predator.
Off a lot of things. Hunger Games.
Exactly. All this stuff I want to like. I want to like this more, but I just haven't really. I think
it's like the Randy Orton sequel, even more.
But just the concept itself is great, and it's got Stone Cold Steve Austin, who is like
awesome. Yeah, if you're trying to launch an action star, this is a pretty good way to do it. Mm-hmm. Just a sort of basic, it's action, but it's also not like his name is Max Stone Cold, and he's going to clean up this town. It's like, he can go that direction, or just go more general, like, it's like wrestling, but with murder. Yeah.
It's 12 convicts put on an island together. They stream over the internet to see who is the last one
standing.
It's
not gamer.
Streaming technology in 07, not great.
Oh, man, you gotta download Real Player.
You're gonna watch that in 240p.
Load up that Ustream chat.
Yep.
But also this week, The Invisible, directed by David Goyer, which is the
only
thing.
It's more notable for behind this. There's a little clip, because it seems like an interesting premise.
They can't hear you.
I'm right here!
But if you can solve the mystery of your own death, then you'll have the chance to live again.
Ooh.
So is it Ghost Trick?
Yes, he dies and no one can see him. And if he can solve his murder, he gets to go to heaven or something like that?
Disneyland?
But one of the first movies directed by David Goyer, who is, for us, if you don't know, we're big comic nerds and kind of pioneered comics and cinema, for real.
Didn't he write Panic Room as well or something like that?
Dude, his bio begins with writing the sequel to Kickboxer and creating the demonic toys. And somehow spun that into, what do you think his first involvement was with a comic property? He wrote Batman Begins, Man of Steel.
Was it one of the Blades?
He directed Blade 3 and wrote
he wrote
all the Blades, but like,
the first two are good.
There wouldn't be these comic book movies without fucking Blade. No, that's where it starts.
Yeah, Blade.
His first involvement, though, I thought this was fascinating because I was trying to figure out a timeline for Goyer. Huh. Also wrote Call of Duty Black Ops 1 and 2.
Hey, not like Men in Black or something weird like that.
No. It's so weird. His first movie that he wrote, David Hasselhoff's Nick Fury.
Wow.
But
he's
credited with the creation of, Abraham Whistler? Chris Christopherson's character in Blade, based on a Marvel comic, but he created that character 2 years before Blade came out. Abraham Whistler appears in an episode of Spider-Man the Animated Series.
Wow.
So I have no idea how long that movie was in gestation for. Because it's not, that character is unique to films, not comics, and appears in Spider-Man 2 years before Blade debuts. He wrote Man of Steel, all the Batman movies. He's responsible for as much that you hate that you love. But this is one of his directorial efforts, and I've never actually heard of it in my life.
Yeah, that's so bizarre.
Oh, and it's the last, it's for a big Disney dork, it's the last Disney movie released under the Hollywood Pictures Sphinx logo.
Oh, it's the Sphinx, it stinks.
Yeah.
No, it's their worst shit that they put out with Hollywood Pictures.
It's really weird because Disney has made so many acquisitions that, like, Hollywood Pictures is supposed to be like, this is for stuff we don't want to put the Disney brand on. But then they acquired Miramax, and they kind of, if they're going to put the Disney name on, it's going to be Marvel, Star Wars, a fucking animated cartoon remake.
Yeah.
They don't need this. They don't need those kind of movies anymore.
Yeah. Keeping the train moving with big hits is kicking it old school with Jamie Kennedy and Vivica A. Fox.
I didn't even know the premise. He's a breakdancer that goes into a coma and wakes up 80s obsessed in the modern day. The modern day being 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's perfect for the show.
And I wanted to play both this with a Condemned clip because it's all about characters discovering the fucking internet.
20 years later, he's waking up.
We should pay for that physical therapy thing.
That's my boy.
To a whole new world.
I think it's time I introduce you to the internet.
Bodies aren't supposed to midget, cheese whiz, by the power of Grayskull.
Wait, so does it take place in, I guess it takes place in 2007.
Yes.
He got knocked out in 1987.
It's the perfect 30-20-10 movie, sadly.
Hey.
No. And it's, Jesus Christ, I don't wish ill will on Jamie Kennedy. Just why is he involved with all things that suck so much? Kicking it old school.
Man. And I think, what is it, 1 year later he'll do that awful press conference for E3.
And be a dick about it for the rest of his life.
Yes.
Which I don't mind talking shit about it.
Maybe the biggest movie? I don't know. This movie also is bad, but the premise for this Nicolas Cage, Julianne Moore joke was so great. And at this point, we were all in on the Nicolas Cage joke and are just like, man, I kind of want to see this in the theater.
His hair is at peak parody in this film. Next.
Next.
Chris Johnson has the ability to see things before they happen. And if you can see the future, you can change the present.
Oh, but he can only see like 2 minutes into the future or something like that?
Something. Yeah. But it just looked like...
Constantly on edge.
For Nicolas Cage to just ham it up with a ridiculous sci-fi premise, and we almost saw this, but
good old-fashioned Philip K. Dick adaptation, which means that they're going to screw it up.
They're going to fuck up a short story by elongating it into 2.5 hours starring Nicolas Cage,
where you know he's just going to get frantic and be like, we've got to stop that because of what I saw.
And in doing research for this segment,
that was a terrible impression.
Reminded me of like being new to San. I would see every movie, but this is kind of like the dawn of Chris not having cable. So like, I would have seen this at any other point in my life. I would have watched every fucking movie via Blockbuster visit or Netflix subscription, which I didn't have once I came to San Francisco, and I kind of missed all these.
I didn't really use Netflix till it started streaming on consoles. Yeah. So yeah, this is any movie in 07 and 08 is like, if I didn't see it opening weekend, it's probably never going to be watched.
I mean, I was a loser who stayed at home and was excited every Saturday night for whatever HBO would premiere. Like, hell yeah.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
But that's it for movies. Mm. Just a bunch of
yes. Bunch of wind.
So we're going to start off with some reality show stuff. Yay. Jordan Sparks won American Idol season 6 this week.
Yay.
But this was the season that they had Sanjaya. I don't know if you guys remember that guy.
Sanjaya.
It's vague.
It was like the threat of William Hung finally realized, where it's like, oh, people keep voting for this guy who is not very good just because he's very charming.
That's why people shouldn't be allowed to vote. I've said it 1,000 times.
I'm the best singer. Don't worry about it.
Almost avoided it.
But where one reality show ends, another begins. April 22nd, 2007, the fifth season of Celebrity Fit Club debuts on VH1. This year's
fatties.
Yes, this season's fatties are Maureen McCormick, a.k.a. Marsha Brady. Dustin Screech Diamond.
Are these people just not overweight anymore? They're out of shape?
They're mildly out of shape because, like, Marsha Brady.
My back hurts
sometimes. She lost, like, 35 pounds, so she was probably, like, 150, 160, and then, you know, got to like Hollywood weight.
150.
Yeah. I don't know. I you can find their weight on the site on Wikipedia. I didn't write those down. Also on the cast were Tiffany, Warren G, and DeBrat.
DeBrat.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I thought it was going to be the third consecutive failure of Ralphie May to lose any weight.
Oh man. And moving on to comedies of the week. April 26, 2007, the Office episode Product Recall features one of Jim's best pranks, in my opinion, on the show, when he imitates Dwight.
Oh, man. That's pretty funny. He's just dressed exactly like Dwight.
Question. What kind of bear is best?
That's a ridiculous question.
False. Black bear.
Well, that's debatable. There are basically two schools of thought.
Fact. Bears eat beets.
Oh.
Bears. Beets. Battlestar Galactica.
Bears do not. What is going on? What are you doing? Last week,
somebody slowly realized.
It took him forever. It's like this minor realization. I think I found my best friend.
Yeah.
But, man, like, this week, I remember, 10 years ago, just like, oh, I love that line. Bears beats Battlestar Galactica. And another comedy line that got ingrained in my head this week was from Saturday Night Live, April 21st, 2007. The episode was hosted by Scarlett Johansson. Musical guest Bjork has one of my favorite, like, stupid sketches, Mike's Marbleopolis, where Fred Armisen plays the owner of a place that sells marble columns. So it's basically just an excuse for Fred Armisen to continually say marble columns and Scarlett Johansson to have a terrible Jersey accent. Here's a clip of it.
You gotta get yourself some marble columns. You don't believe me? Just ask my daughter Lexi.
Look at these columns. Look at this one. Look at that one. Can you believe it? You can stick these things everywhere. They make your house look like a palace. Like a castle. People are going to look at your house and go, who lives there? The Pope? What is that? The Playboy Mansion? It's ridiculous.
That's great.
Yeah.
This is your daughter's bedroom. It's where she fucks everybody because your daughter's a whore.
Yeah.
Everyone watch Italian Style in
a
House?
A bunch of used condoms and a brandy snifter.
But Scarlett Johansson, she is on that short list of like, five people that I think should host every year
because she's really dependable.
Gold, like her, Louis C.K., Melissa McCarthy, like just bring them on every year. The Rock, like they're just
complicit.
Yeah, But that's one
that
of
the, made
she,
me so happy.
She
I
always bring, she brings that character back like every year. I mean, well, as long as Fred Armisen was around, they would just sell a new stupid thing.
It really sounded like he was like, saying like Stan
check
Lee
out these
pronouncing
fountains. Aren't they classy?
It did sound like Stan Lee pronouncing Marvel Comics. Marvel Columns.
And last and least this week, the TV show Reigns ends its reign.
Huh?
Chocolate Rain?
Chocolate. It's Jeff Goldblum as a detective who...
What? How did that fail?
With the undead.
Hang on.
Seven-episode reign of Reign. He's an LAPD detective who interacts with dead crime victims to solve his cases. Sounds like that's been done tons of times.
Is anyone else seeing this?
I know you can't talk, but can you communicate in my mind?
Yes.
And that's it for television.
I feel like it didn't take too long for them to realize Jeff Goldblum can play an investigator, but this show is stupid, so he can start swapping in on Law and Order Criminal Intent. And he's good there. That's where he's good, but he's not trying to talk to bodies.
Usually if you could say Jeff Goldblum plays a disgraced blank, I'm like, yeah, I'm there. I'm that's all good.
That's such a weird, like, God, that sounds
there's
like the
so
the...
many of those. The fucking Ghost Whisperer. Plus all your
the
CSIs,
Invisible,
your
that,
bones.
That pilot, that unaired 17th Precinct pilot that's like, what if science hadn't been invented and it's just Harry Potter
premise.
Police.
What a great premise.
Yes, like, sad news for you. Science doesn't get invented. The sun worked before we figured out how it worked. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, games this week, Made Man on PS2, written by crime writer David Fisher.
Sure.
Don't know. But yeah, one of those like, hey, GTA and Reservoir Dogs are big. Let's make a game called
Made
Man.
These are easy to do, right?
And we'll have a lot of F-words in it, and you'll shoot people, and that's the game.
You'll drive and shoot and drive and shoot and drive and shoot.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of dialogue and whatever.
Guessing some huge celebrities.
I thought this was what the game that had Michael Madsen in it, but it didn't.
GTA and
that's
another
Madsen
one.
Man.
There was some game that was like one of these that wasn't based on a property that. And I remember Michael wrote a line that said, "Michael will grunt for food, Madsen," and that has never left me. Every time I see his name, I'm like, poor Michael. And I don't know why.
He's the only actor. There's a Reservoir Dogs game, and every actor in that film, who doesn't really have a right to, said no fucking way, except for Michael Madsen.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But then the big one this week that everyone gets out of the way, well, I guess before that, is SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash.
Ah, Jesus.
A, you know, card strategy battling game, kind of like Magic the Gathering or whatever, but with tons of characters from the SNK and Capcom universes.
Man,
that a bunch of people won't know.
I know that these have its fans, but like the concept of taking all these great fighting game characters and making you play cards.
Oh, it's not just fighting game characters.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's a ton of stuff, and they reutilize some of the assets from other games as well. I mean, if you're really into both.
I don't know if they do that because it's made for DS. Like, I don't think there's existing sprites they're pulling
I tried to research these at one point, and they don't have a ton of fans to tell you who's in what game.
Sorry, just the idea of playing cards. I'm just thinking, like, Bowser, do you have any twos? Go fish.
I cast Balrog, the boxer.
But this game is best known. I remember when this happened, there was an unavoidable bug, like, many hours into the game that just crashes the game.
Whoa.
Like, and you can't avoid it. The game just eats it.
Can't connect to the internet to update.
So they had to do, like, a recall, and here are repaired versions of the game. Like, you can tell by the, you know, there was something on the cart that let you know this one is fixed.
Huh.
But yeah, the game went out with a game-breaking bug. But the big game this week is Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, the fourth generation of Pokemans that began with Red and Blue in 98 for us in the U.S., and then we got Gold and Silver in 2000, Ruby Sapphire in, I think, 03, and then Diamond and Pearl in 07, which is the first one on the Nintendo DS. This one blows up and is absolutely huge, sells 400 million copies. Introduces online trading with the global trading system or service, forget what it is, the GTS, where you could, hey, I don't have to meet you physically and connect our things with cords. Like, you can put it up on the Nintendo internet.
I don't have
to
wait for Toys R Us to set up an event.
Yeah, and then you would just, you know, you would go do something else, and then later you would connect and be like, hey, did anybody take my thing? They did. And you could say, here's what I want for it, and they can give you that. But it, like, for that level of trading in 2007, given all the stuff that Nintendo gets slammed on for its internet capabilities, this was like outrageously competent. And it had a website that was helpful. Yeah. It was like, I can now trade Pokemon with anybody. This is crazy.
Did they make it backwards compatible for the virtual console Pokemon games? Is it the same network?
Well, there's always, each of the generations has some weird breaking off point where the games don't talk forward, but the DS, because the DS let Game Boy cards be plugged into the bottom GBA cards, that let you move some, and then the 3DS has a way to move them, but Pokemon Bank is now the way. You can just upload things into the ether, and the idea is that these things will be there forever. But
and
I put,
it's more stable than the Federal Reserve.
It is. Nah. These things were guaranteed to go up in value. but this game also was huge because the second screen basically had a bunch of apps built into it. And this is, again, pre-iPhone launching in the U.S. So they're called Poketch apps. And these apps surfaced some of the like really deep late-game stuff, like looking for shiny Pokemon, which are super rare variants, or EV training. You could find a way to kind of... Again, this gets into why Pokemon is such an actually competitive game that works both as a fun RPG by yourself, a battling game for one or two players, and then also this like super dense esports game where you're like, wow, like this is hundreds of hours of investment to make this perfect Pokemon team. But this game just did a good job of surfacing in the right way, and then I think X and Y did it even a little better years later. But I put like 300 hours into this. Wow. Carolyn and I played it just like on the couch hours after hours after hours, and then a few people in the office would play, and then there were people around the games industry we would trade Pokemon with. It was just, I hadn't played one to this degree since Red and Blue, and then this was the next one that I just got absolutely hooked on and just farmed out Spiritombs for months. And Spiritomb is such a great Pokemon. It's a gravestone with a ghost floating over it.
So how did you divide those 300 hours between the games? Was it all 300 in one of the two?
Yeah, it's just Diamond. Okay. And then Carolyn had Pearl. So
was there, why'd you get Diamond? Was there a specific Pokemon exclusive to that tickled your fancy?
Usually I go by the cover legendary.
Okay.
And whichever one's on that is the one that I want, the legendary that's in there. So there's Dialga and Palkia. I don't have to tell you guys that. But,
No,
Diamond and Pearl I really enjoyed. I thought the music was great. The sprites are really... really nice. Like, the animations and the battles are cool. I really, really like Diamond and Pearl.
I almost regret asking this question, so can you keep your answer to 25 words or less?
No promises.
But it's two games that came out at the same time. What is the difference?
So this
I'm counting your words.
Well, I'm going to go over. This goes back to the original Red and Blue. Yeah.
Didn't we made the analogy for Flags of Our Fathers and Sands of Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
So they're different games, but on
set at the same time
same
period.
At the same time.
So they are 75% the exact same game. The idea is there's like 15 to 20, I don't remember the number, of Pokemon that are only in Diamond, and 15 or 20 Pokemon that are only in Pearl, and then the other 100 are the same. So the idea is a very clever marketing trick to get your friends to buy the other one so that you will be able to trade Pokemon and collect them all.
Got it.
Gotta catch them all. So that's why. And then there's also some Pokemon that only evolve when traded. So it's like you build them up on yours, you trade them, and then in the process, boing, they
it's
get bigger.
It's not as evil as you would think it is. Yeah.
Okay.
If anything, it brings... It's designed to make money, but it also... It forces a social circle around this game, which is why
where
it means
people ask,
so
like,
much.
What are you? Are you Sun?
Sun and Moon. Yeah. Like, it's always like, which one did you get? And you kind of want to coordinate with your friends. Like, well, I'm getting X, or are you getting Y? Like,
that means I can trade you for stuff I don't have.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
you kept that pretty short. Thank you.
Yeah. So,
you didn't throw
and then
a
they
ton,
released the third version.
Didn't throw a ton of crazy words at me. So
my personal thoughts on Pokemon games are if Yukon Cornelius can sing about both of the games, then it's a good, then those are good games.
Silver and gold joke.
Diamond and Pearl. Diamond and Pearl.
That is a snowman played by Burl Ives, not Yukon Cornelius.
Oh, really?
The inaccuracy threw me off, Dave.
Yeah, wait, Yukon Cornelius sings about silver and gold, right?
That's the snowman who introduces the fucking special,
man.
Yukon Cornelius is in the story.
Okay. But he's the one who's searching for the silver and gold, right?
No!
Okay, forget it.
We're watching this right now.
Oh,
no. In April.
Just the Prince song. Just think the Prince song.
Okay.
Diamonds and pearls.
Really let the joke get away from me.
Moving out of this mess.
Now commenters don't get to call you on it, because I did.
Speaking of commenters, every week we post a new episode on 302010.net, and we get some great comments on the show, again, telling us what you were doing in that time frame. Mm-hmm. How these movies or shows spoke to you at the time. So a few comments quickly from 302010.net.
Hey.
Ballerina Toshinden. Teletubbies is a British import, as I'm sure you guys are aware. because we just talked about Teletubbies debuting. But Ragdoll Productions, the company behind it, have been creating nightmare fuel for decades. In the mid-80s, they were responsible for Pob's Program, a sort of proto-Teletubbies educational show that was presented by the kind of puppet you can imagine someone's soul being banished to. It had a memorable introduction with Pob speaking in tongues while standing in front of a strobing kaleidoscopic background, then spraying the screen with what appears to be spittle before writing his name in it.
Yeah.
All while accompanied by the most unsettling off-key farty synth brass. Even as a child, I remember wanting it to be over so I could watch Land of the Giants. Jar said, let me tell you all about Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 2.
Oh, boy.
It's so much more than Garbage Day.
True.
While that part always gets a laugh, Jockish Sweater Man is operating at 11 for the entire movie, and his eyebrows never stop moving. There are more perfect bad films out there, but that guy is my end-all, be-all favorite bad performance of all time.
Nice. Mm.
Crazier, my sister was really into Teletubbies, and the only memory I have is taking all four of her Teletubby toys, opening them, and swapping the voice boxes. So when she went to play with them, they all started saying the wrong things, and she cried. Tom, finally, With Nail and I is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I get excited every time Richard E. Grant appears in anything, most recently Girls, Logan, and Game of Thrones.
Well, he's always awesome.
Simply because of how much I love him as With Nail. Nearly every single line he delivers in the movie is endlessly quotable. I would say, though, don't go in expecting a broad comedy, because it really isn't that. It doesn't even have jokes or much of a plot. It has kind of a bleak, rainy tone to it. As Diana says, it's a film that tries to encapsulate the tail end of the 60s, the hangover to the biggest party the world has ever known. Those are comments from 302010.net.
That's right.
Lots of fun.
I don't know if it's from that same comment or someone else's comment about the Camberwell carrot. The guy that's in Wayne's World 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fans of Wayne's World will get a kick out of the character.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yes. It's a character from With Nail and I ends up showing up in Wayne's World 2. Yeah. The thing about separating the M&Ms and then I beat them to death.
So Ozzy wouldn't go on stage.
Beat them to death with their own shoes.
Played by Ralph Brown, who went on to play basically the same character in Wayne's World 2.
I totally forgot about that. Thank you for the comments.
Yes. But bring us into the show. Deaths this week. In 2007, we lost Jack Valenti at 85.
Jack Valenti.
He was the head of the Motion Picture Association of America.
The MPAA.
He's the lying bastard who's in charge of all the stupid ratings and stupidness and stupid. And he was.
I don't want to see any lesbian shit. Ever.
I feel like, was it Animaniacs? They made fun of him a bunch of times.
Really?
They talked about how he's like, because he had really big cheeks, so it looked like he was storing nuts for winter.
It was either a show for kids.
It was either Animaniacs or Freakazoid.
It's not that it holds up really well. Yeah. You'll get it on an entirely different level as an adult. Yeah. I cannot believe the shit they were throwing at us on Animaniacs.
Even back then, I was like, what is this variety talk?
Who is Howard Stern, and why is there a 20-minute joke about him?
And someone else who was almost assuredly made fun of on Animaniacs, Boris Yeltsin, died this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Age of 76.
I miss Boris so much. He was so much fun. He was like their Clinton in a way, except without the women, but with more drinking.
Yeah, he looked more like their GW, because he seemed constantly lost and confused.
Yeah.
But he's not the birthmark head guy, right?
No,
that's Gorbachev.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Yeltsin was the first of the democratically elected presidents. Yeah.
You're thinking of the guy from Zangief's ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a fun video. I couldn't find it. It's probably out there. There was some concert right towards the end here, like 96 or so, where Yeltsin was at a concert, and he just like got up on stage and started doing this dance. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's sort of the invisible maracas dance. And, you know, he's a big old tubby dude, and it's just the sweetest that you just like want to hug him. Like, you're so cute. I'm going to put you in my pocket.
But at least he made it to 2007.
Good for him.
He made it through a very tumultuous time of history. Yeah. But that is the end of the show. You can go to 302010.net. Follow along with the show every week. We post the notes up there along with a lot of the clips that we play. The show is supported by patreon.com/lasertime. And Lasertime, Chris, is the main show we do.
Yes, the one that started it all. Topic-based and in honor of Fast and the Furious / Baby Driver, a movie I'm very excited about. Ooh. You heard me talk about that in the Hot Fuzz episode. We're doing. I got our buddy Grim on to talk the best movie car chases in our opinion.
I can think of a couple.
We told Bullet to go screw.
Okay.
We did because we want to make it more modern and update it a little bit. Tired of hearing all that shit.
Oh, I got one that's 30 years old, but
what?
Does To Live and Die in L.A.
Hell yeah, it is. All right. I can't wait to talk more about that movie. Movie's great.
That movie's awesome.
Yes, it's totally in there. And you can see an article on that on LaserTimePodcast.com in addition to Talking Simpsons and a bunch of our video streams, usually that relate to this. I'm crossing my fingers right now, but I want to do Fighters Mega Mix so bad. But that's a really hard game to get moving again.
LaserTime has a Patreon. Patreon.com/LaserTime helped make this show and several others possible. If you... give at least $5 a month. You can get so much cool stuff. We do a weekly show bonus time where we talk about our favorite things in 2017. Mm-hmm. We also do at least twice monthly movie commentaries. We do additional commentaries for wrestling matches, classic cartoon episodes, tons of great stuff there. And Cheap Podcast, a pro wrestling podcast. Man, might have to do something to celebrate Condemned turning 10 years old. What a classic.
I pity you.
And if you want to talk about video games, there's also a whole show. Yeah. This is Video Game Apocalypse. And you want to talk classic movies and such, I am on Twitter now, at ListenANerd.
And that brings us to the final, final moment of the show. the birthday quiz. One man, one woman.
Yes.
Get ready to guess a name.
Yes. Born this week.
Born this week, in sometime in the past. Born in 1958. Nominated for Best Actress Golden Globe in 1990.
Brr.
She was in Muppets from Space. Magic Mike XXL is a woman with a huge...
Annie McDowell.
Yes.
Damn.
With a huge vagina.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was it only Kevin Nash could fuck her?
No, it was the other guy. One of the main
Joe
guys.
Joe Manganiello?
Yeah.
I don't remember his name. I can't remember. But he complained about having his wiener was too big, and he could never find a woman that could accommodate him.
It's like,
and she was like, man, my thing's so big, I've never met a man who could...
It's like Cinderella's slipper, but...
the movie is so good.
I've never seen my story told so well.
Please watch this movie.
Ever before.
This is
Magic
one of my,
Mike XXL, so great.
One of my favorite movies of 2015. Without
easily,
a doubt.
Easily.
She's also in Hudson Hawk and Groundhog Day, where my other two. Born in 1970.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Gotta reset the birthday song here from Home Movies.
Home Movies.
Born in 1970. He was in Talladega Nights, The Hangover. He was an 0405 member of SNL.
Fred Armisen.
He was a lieutenant colonel in the Marine.
Rob Riggle.
Yes.
Man, who got that?
It's hard to say who got that one.
Lieutenant colonel is such a high rank. I don't understand.
F'd a lot of S up.
Wasn't the Jewel joke about him at the roast that he looks like someone constantly upset with his gay son?
Yes, that was... that was...
That was really good.
And I'm going to take you out with... The Trainer Battle from Diamond and Pearl. Such a good song, I'm telling you. There's a whole VG Empire, my game music podcast. We did a whole month of Pokemon episodes. So if you have any nostalgia for the music from literally any Pokemon game, go to VGEmpire.com, look up Pokemon, or Pokemonth, as I called it. But we'll be back in a week with more of what happened in 87, 97, and 2007.